Okay, welcome everyone for the weekly English medium discussion. Today is 25th October, Tuesday. We are going to have 1 hour. Suki hontu. Sadhu, sadhu anumodami. Anumodi tabbam. Kamami kamitabbam suki hontu okay, we have almost 1 hour for the day today, and before going to the assigned discourse Mahavyuha Sutta, if anyone is having any other comments or a proposal or any meditation reports, we can take a few minutes.
Srila Bhante, I'm Kumar here from Oman. We have received one report, Bhante. At your permission, I can listen to you.
Go ahead.
Dear Bhante, I am 15 years old and have been practicing for 4 years. This is my experience. Please advise me. Today, I sat down for my sitting meditation, overcome by an intense emotion. At first, when I tried to turn my focus to one thing, like my breathing, I was soon distracted by my desire to indulge in the emotion. I wanted to justify that emotion and indulge in it. And overall, I was very attached to the emotion and was very defensive of it. I felt like a weight placed on my head. I turned my awareness to this overwhelming emotion and began to watch it. I was easily distracted by intensity of it and wanted to escape it at first. But as I kept watching, it became more foreign to me and became less and less attached to it. Teruvan Sarnai, Hasini. That's the end of the report.
So basically, many of us are happy with this kind of intense, torturing remarks and the tension. That's a kind of a brutality in ourselves. We are masochism. Of course, not that we are always overwhelmed by them, but we are very happy to report about them because very immediate, rather than the pleasurable things. So they are very aesthetic and they are not very deep. But these emotions are very deep. They can do scratchy. They are very aberration. And that is what. So, what kind of a person are you? Are you happy to talk about only the good things? Upanishad used to say, love spots. Only see the love spots of the others. Only see the love spots of the nature and the life. Or otherwise, you can think about this kind of a bitter and astringent kind of experience within oneself or within other out of thing. But I'm not telling all the time to be with the pleasure principle. I'm not always telling to be in the glad game. But to be glad game, to be happy, you must have this kind of pricky, this kind of harsh situation. But it is not yours. It is of ours. So therefore we are sharing. And many younger generation, they can't handle it. So they are reacting either to the parents or the teacher or the society or unto oneself. So that's why, again, in a country like Sri Lanka, the suicidal trend increasing. So Japan is worst, and even in America. So much of war veterans, they have this suicidal trend. But they can't handle it. They don't consider this as temporary. Once you got into that, you get bogged down, overwhelmed. And lucky we have a window, we have a platform, we have a discussion ground. So therefore, writing this kind of a thing is naturally a counseling effect. Naturally a catharsis, vomiting. And it is dirty, but that is the way you are purified. More you vomit, otherwise you have to chew in the cud, rumination. So therefore, there should have a kind of a platform for us to share this thing, but the material we are sharing may be dirty. Material we are sharing may not be very social, very aesthetic, very fantastic, or so to say entertaining. But we must entertain them. I think that's the main crucial thing in our discussion. So you, yeah, 15 years old. So very happy, almost daily in the weekly discussion you give kind of a reflection. And some of our participants also, they sometimes comment on this. And I will open the ground for these comments. And that's all what I have to say. Anyone is happy to give comments on this report?
It's like a superpower to be able to sit back and watch or to know that these are thoughts arising in your mind, and strong thoughts or weak thoughts, whatever kind of thoughts are going on, and it's a laboratory. You have your own information. And Ajahn Chah used to say, like, if you know the hair on your own head, then you know and understand something about the hair on the heads of everybody else in the world. So understanding these kind of strong thoughts that you have in your mind, you need to understand that every other person has these kind of strong thoughts. So it's a kind of like you have a laboratory and you can know about how other people are and what's moving them too. And you can think to yourself, just as I have these kind of strong thoughts, these strong thoughts are happening in other people too. And I wonder how they're dealing with their strong thoughts. How do they act? Do they react? Are they have they manageability over these kind of things? What do they do with these strong thoughts? Do they do skillful things or unskillful things with them? And you can kind of be curious and learn about the nature of the mind, your own mind and the mind of others. And then you possess this information. You own it yourself. You don't need other people to tell you this is the way of the world, this is how people are. You know yourself because you've been looking at your own mind, and you also have some idea about what's going on in the minds of other people, in the sense that you can ask them what was happening for you, and then what did you do with that information, or what did you do with that thought? Because you'll find that most people don't understand that a thought is just a thought and they don't have to do anything about it. They will think, oh, I had this thought, now I need to act on that thought. And they can do foolish things as a result. So you have this opportunity to really develop a kind of a superpower where you know your own mind, and you also have a good idea about the mind of other people. And this is a kind of very, very amazing ability. So it's very heartening to hear every week your reporting and also your investigations and your information that you're generating. So, you know, as Mahatera was saying, please keep going at this.
I wanted to comment on the report as well. Thank you, Swaminansa. The thing that really struck me was that you had this emotion and it was overwhelming, maybe, or very strong, and that you, by paying attention to it, you found after a while that you weren't identifying with it. So that's really a great thing to have happen, because, well, Swaminansa had mentioned suicide. You know, if people could be conscious of their emotions and become less identified with them, perhaps that could be help them get past such strong feelings that would lead to actions that are very destructive. That's my comment.
Vasarai Swaminasa, and thank you, Mahasangha, for all the comments. And I just quickly wanted to comment on this report that, there was a strong emotion that was experienced during this sitting. And by just being aware of that emotion, you're already starting the process, one could say, of understanding the nature of this emotion. So, you know, because a lot of people in the world, when they have a strong emotion, I think as Bhante over there mentioned earlier, they just kind of react on it. And they just have an emotion and they can't, you know, understand where it's coming from, or, you know, they can't assess their emotions with wisdom. And so that's the next step is, you know, the awareness is the first step, is to actually become aware of these thoughts, like, you know, what's going on in my mind. And when it comes up, you know, I need to be aware of that emotion coming up, and then, you know, assessing that emotion with wisdom. You know, where is this coming from? You know, it's, a lot of times these powerful emotions, they come from craving, clinging, and attachment of some kind. And so the mind, you know, also has the nature to wander. So, you know, these negative emotions or these very powerful emotions can be rather common, you know, with, you know, the wandering mind. You know, the mind is always finding reasons to suffer and not be happy. And so, you know, the first step is, of course, being aware of that emotion, you know. I would say is being aware of that emotion, what's actually going on in my mind, and actually, like, being aware that it's there, being aware that that emotion is there, which a lot of people in the world are not able to see or really be aware when these strong and powerful emotions pop up in their mind. And then the next step is, I would say, to assess it with wisdom. Where is this coming from? Why do I have this emotion in my mind? And, you know, is there craving, clinging, or attachment of some kind behind this emotion? And a lot of times there is behind these powerful emotions like that, or negative emotions. So,
Asaray Bande, respect to Mahasangha. I would also like to say a few words about the report. Definitely, this report has come from sitting, and when you are sitting, what you naturally do is you bring your attention to the body. So you have had the skill to go through the body and then dig the tunnel to the mind, and this is why you are talking about emotions. And the word emotions is fairly general, and if you rather than using the word emotion, if you would have given some real experience of how you feel it, it would have shown, or it would have thrown a bit more light onto what has been happening. And anyway, having said that, coming from matter to emotion means you have the ability to go from the matter to immatter, or to the energy layer. So as you have mentioned in the report, just keep observing without doing anything until such time this emotion turns to just a sensation, and you just see that sensation as well, so that you will be able to more and more get close to the way how matter becomes energy. So you will just see that things are not under your control, and you will let most of the things that you are holding as negative energies that passes from you. So I hope this is what you are trying to do, and this is what you will be able to further do without doing anything. Just keep strong alertness to whatever phenomena is happening, and you have that skill, and well done.
Okay, so that's why it's not the superpower. As Irish Buddharakya, yeah, sorry, the Venerable Buddharakya is saying it's a superhuman. This is what you call utopia. That's what Nietzsche was telling. We are superhuman because we can gulp, we can swallow our own emotion, and not only that, we are presenting it to a decent society. Telling I had such a this thing, and aftermath was I feel like sharing with others. Otherwise, it will be destructive. Otherwise, it will be going against the society, going against oneself. So that is what I call mindful family. So in the mindful family, we have someone to share with. And most of us, we have undergone. And lucky enough, still we are monk. Still we have not broken our neck. And we can listen. When you are listening, we say the transference, the communication is taking place. Not irrespective of the age, sex and the religion, that we must open the door. So that is happening. I am very happy. Again and again I am telling that when compared to the 40 years ago, we had no such a platform. Unless otherwise you're very specific and go and select, or otherwise you have to pay for that. But I was so lucky. I never gave up that chance. I took it, I grabbed hold it. And I try my best to give the discussions, the free association. And wherever I go, I am hesitant to give a formal talk. And rather than promoting individual experience, not that it's gossiping. Because we have to take into the real track. Talking what is under your very nose, maybe bitter, maybe astringent, no harm. But it make very beautiful. Thank you. That young girl is very lucky to have so much of comments, isn't it? Five monks commenting. It's a commendable. So I will take 5 minutes before go that about. I will give a little briefing about the conference that I participated, and that was the book, and they have published, and it was 2 days and 4 sessions. And just like our mindful conference, I am taking only the time to give my briefing. At last, everyone was asked to give comments, their participation. I gave number of points. I am going by point by point. Number one, the parallelism I found in the USA. You can read the in this book. I am talking only the participants. The session, second session, 1:30. To 3 o'clock, and they were basically maybe about the Sadhguru's disciples, and there were some 2 professors presented them, and they were talking about what they are doing for the USA situation. This is about the higher education for mindfulness for earth. So I told, when I am reading, I feel quite familiar, because you all are talking exactly the same mindful games, mindful sitting, mindful walking, and mindful activities. And they came out with a lot. Then I told, I feel membership, because specifically I mentioned, and somewhat you had to go 1 session before. She was a specific professor. She wanted to bring children of higher education, and 2 of them came and they gave their experience. So that is the way communication takes. The first thing is parallelism of USA and Sri Lanka. I mean Satipatthana. I presented enough about what we are doing in Satipatthana. And the second thing is I complain whole conference telling you people are obsessed with this preventive therapeutic mindfulness, because you have enough problems. But one person told that mindfulness is the only answer. Then I told, even the mindfulness is the answer for the preventative, therapeutic, you have to be very patient. Only a little fraction get the idea of mindfulness. All are obsessed with concentration. I told, don't make it a concentration camp. All the people think mindfulness is concentration. I told you all, also, I am accusing every one of you. Mindfulness is no nonsense. It's a bare attention. And therefore, prevention is better than cure. I gave all the quotation happening in the 2 days. And I feel I am very sorry. I am coming from Sri Lanka. I have a universal answer, not only for the prevention. Prevention made the door open. And I am going, curative was what they are talking about. That's why I call business Buddhism, American Buddhism. I am much aware about you than you Connecticut people. Not a single person I love participating in the conference. Later they told that Richard Davidson and others are invited, they are busy. Then I try very happy. And therefore, make it a point to make it prevention is better than cure. But the prevention take still higher patient. When there is no need, very difficult to sell mindfulness. But I told we have 4.5 million children. And we have done 20% already. And we have such a demand. All the monks are now on toes, giving sermons. So therefore, make it a point of prevention. And that's specifically this Gurdjieff, not the Gurdjieff, she was Godfrey. And she was talking about the mindful activism. Then I told, be careful. You have to active without reaction. Definitely told activism was a failure. They had some demonstration, not well accepted. Then I told, because you are not in action, you are reaction. Krishnamurti says action is beautiful, reaction is dirty. Don't teach them. Tell non-reaction. That's one of the quality of the mindfulness. Read the book. I gave each one the book, Power of Mindfulness. I told it's a Jew. Venerable Jnanaponika, and there was a few Jews. They were so happy to listen that Venerable Jnanaponika has written. I told 60 years ago. And it was a book for me also to be a monk. So therefore, take it. And action is non-reaction is better than action. Number three. And number four, don't talk about the high education. Everyone must be a beginner. Therefore, we must give the message to the whole family. Mindful family. Don't select, take it out. There are four, five sections in education. Pre-education, school section, Sunday schools, Pirivene, and higher education. So I told that November month, I am having three sessions in Peradeniya University because these children, four children committed suicide. Engineer, poor undergraduate. And the dean is my best friend. And he has already given two credits for mindfulness. And I have to go there and remind him. I told, I am also interested in, but don't make it the higher education. It's a mistake. It's a whole family. We all are beginners. And that character was there in the conference. Many are beginners. They never claim that I know. I claim like I know. I know I am coming from 40 years of experience, maybe mishandled. Never mind. I have something to tell you. And they were accepting. So therefore, mindful. I suggested, what about the mindful campus? Recognize Yukon as a mindful campus. Oh, love, I love Bhante. That was a Dan. Then I told, what about appointing a mindful chaplain? For each, that is good. I told, recognize the mindful campuses and have a chaplain, but don't give a chance to the chaplain. Ask the children to speak, undergrads to speak. That's the way it is coming because two came and they took enough time. And therefore, the high education and it is educating or mindful family. And that is what happened. We are in the radios, we are in the national television, and we gave a comment. It is not only the high education, that's number four. The number five, teaching mindfulness as a subject in the school. Then I told in Satipasala, we are in a dialogue, some people say, don't teach mindfulness because it becomes religious. It becomes converting into this thing. But I think the Dan, when he was the organizer, he gave us this thing. The introductory talk, he gave Daniel Weiner, the Vice President of the Global Affairs and the Professor, Department of Geography, UConn. He made 5 points of the outcome of this conference. The first one, he told us, we must have a concrete plan today onward. So earlier I went to Norway, there's 14 organizations get together, no plan, finished. But this time he told concrete plan, and we somewhat achieved it. Second thing was, we must have the world map. Go to the sustainable development of the UN, because he is representing UN. Then I told that's one of our goals also. I gave at the beginning the remarks on my remarks on his 5 points. The third one was research. And prevention is better than cure. They have done some researches, and they are leading. We don't have money. Fourth one he mentioned was the personal purification. Then I told that is something new from America. It's everyone talking about the external purification. Then I told my seventh point is mindfulness has a subject for your own purification. And later appointed a team to write a syllabus I say myself also, I told I will also will come if you accept me, because I am not an academy, I am not a profession. Then it's a privilege. Then I told, take the Power of Mindfulness book. That's what I am going to make a syllabus. That I gave a copy. So mindfulness has a subject, and every subject must be taught in entertainment way. Physics for entertainment, maths for entertainment, and then it is not a big task force. I told, we are doing it. We are writing for the education reform in Sri Lanka. Education reform means only mindfulness. There is nothing they have to say. Otherwise, they have to copy American model. It is a failure. But the mindfulness for the America as well as for us. And the communication, I told, I am a bumpkin coming from the village. I have no English education. But I did my English pass at the university level. Now I can understand what you all are talking. I am so happy. Because many people, when they are talking, I can't understand. And why? I mean, I am talking, you respond. I told, I'm so happy, I am a member. Because I am just coming from the very remote areas, and we can communicate. It's very important. I told that communication taking place, and the language we are using. That is very interesting. And the last one was experience of the students. Everyone, maybe always we must give the mindfulness and listen to children. And they will tell, rather than our the bombarding into that. And there's two students came, and they're talking, and for the last session, everyone was congratulating them. They were happy. One Indian, one American boy, the Indian girl was talking. It's always wavering hands and everything. The boy was taking the game by mind, and he was a fully long hair fellow with the beard. And he was talking about the embodiment of mindfulness. I told, that is what you call the Kayanupassana. And they were in the last session. So after this seven points, of course they prepared. They made two committees, one thing for the syllabus writing, the other one was map making, to make trails for children to go out. Then I told, ask to come with me to Wayamba. We are going to take into the caves. You can prepare caves. You can live in caves. I am going there at least once a month. I am just living in a cave. You can't think about it because you are used to these amenities and kind of thing. But the one leader, she is the Pakistan, Ali. And she's a very, very pleasant girl. She told, I feel like coming to Sri Lanka when you're talking about the caves living. I told, why don't you come and have an exchange of children? And soon I come back, the Kalani professor also talked to me. And he will be coming in the 4th November. And he wanted to have a university, they wanted to have a place called Mindful Space and Mindful Monastery for the higher education. He give only the higher education, mindfulness, and exchange of children. Then I called Dan. Dan told, I have the authority, I can do it, but I can appoint the sociology professor. She can communicate, and she is the one brought these children to the conference. It's a very small number, 30 people. Then I asked him, why you are not giving it to the world? No. We are in the developing the plan. Later we can do, but I don't like Zoom. We are a one-to-one relationship. So 2 days went in a very, very high, you call, communicating and interacting, this thing. And that's all I have to say. Just to keep it record, I just wanted to express it. Those who wish to go, you can read this book because they are doing it in a very good way. And writing a pamphlet, and later they will publish this also. And we were well accepted, well treated. So therefore, it was a success. Now we can go because we have already done with 30 minutes. Yes. No. At the beginning we had the sitting. But in the tea break, I found they are chattering. Then I asked Kumanga, why don't you lead? And she also did the sitting sessions. But we had no. I just wanted to have, because while they are eating, they are just chatting and drinking tea. It's just, and Dan found very difficult to bring the people back to the conference because the tea was served in the same room. And he says, now it's time up, please come back. But they are talking. No mindful drinking.
Yeah.
I told you never concerned about the restraint. Why don't you introduce SMS at least, slowly, mindfully, silently? And one girl told, I heard Venerable Dhammajivi is talking about the SMS, it is a message. We must have, in the mindful sessions, we must have certain amount of discipline, not the precepts. I mean, this SMS is a very, this thing. And but they have not thought about that, but they were welcoming. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Now 30 minutes. Yes, anything? No, I asked them, have you ever done walking session? Some people did. I'm very happy. I told that is mindfulness. Sitting and other things are just the theoretical aspect. When you are doing, and they were talking about the mindful walking in the trails. In America, you have the walking paths, have the trails, so gardens. Mm-hmm. So they appointed a team, have a map. And one person presented that the way they are doing, have trails in the walking distance without using vehicles. The university is close by the such trails and promoting them before any session so that their attention will be reduced. So that I told, we have mindful camps, we have mindful our own places, please come, we can share. They appreciate it. Some other cases also, I just asked, do you know about? Then many were raising hand, then I told, I am enough, I don't take time. If you know, that's a happiness, that's a happy for me. But they considered fairly, as a monk, I was the only monk, and they never interfere and give Vidura and everyone complete, due respect, not the high respect, the due respect. Fairly good. Okay, now I invite, when Buddha Rakhisa was desperately waiting, sir, please, that we have beaten Irish cricket team, and for the recent one was, we have beaten, I am very happy, it's a good landmark, and we are on the way to World Cup. So don't worry about that. Just come with the Mahavyuha Sutta, please.
So we are reading the 13th discourse in this chapter of eights, our octets. So again, this is a very deep sutta where the Buddha has created a replica version of himself, a replica Buddha. Psychically, and he's using this replica Buddha to ask him questions that will be of use and benefit to the devas. So again, we've just been listening to this discussion about this conference in Connecticut. These are kind of like devas in the sense that they have great opportunities and wealth and prosperity, but there is a necessity to create great questions so that they can move forward in their wealth and their abundance as devas. So at the start of this sutta, this replica Buddha asked the question, there are those who are settled in views who dispute saying this alone is truth. Do all of them receive only blame, or do some of them also win praise? Then later on in the sutta, the replica Buddha again asks a similar question in the theme. The teaching that some here say is supreme, others say that the same is inferior. Which assertion of theirs could be true when they all claim to be skilled? So here again, you see, it's quite a subtle point the Buddha starts to make. Then he says that they say their own teaching is complete, but they say the other teaching is inferior. Having quarreled thus, they go on disputing, as each say their own opinion is true. If one is inferior when disparaged by an opponent, no one would be distinguished amongst teachings, for they each say the other's teaching is inferior, while firmly advocating their own, and their veneration of their own teachings is done just as they praise their own ways, all their assertions would be truthful, since for them purity is exclusively their own. So this is a very interesting point, that once we get into... Once we have developed a theory or an idea or a view or a position, that we fail to see the view or opinion or position of another, and we view our own opinion and position as superior and as truth itself, and we fail to see the truth in somebody else's perspective. So this ability to hear our own thoughts and thinking, and to just recognize them as thinking or a thought, and to hear the, to recognize that, oh, somebody else is also having thoughts and thinking, and that's their thought and thinking, and we can start to separate these things out, that I have thoughts, the other person has thoughts, and that this is not necessarily purity or truth. I mean, I can have a clever idea, and I can understand that maybe somebody else hasn't thought through their idea very well. But I shouldn't get on my high horse and get develop this kind of superiority about it. I may have spent a lot of time thinking about it. For instance, we were just talking now about having 40 years' experience as a meditator. That we need to have that beginner's mind, and humility to not be fooled by our own ideas that this is purity and this is truth and everybody else is not pure, not true, and so forth. Because we can actually be informed by the beginner's mind as well. However, this takes, I think it takes that kind of perspective, like we were earlier on discussing from that girl's report this morning, was that we see thoughts as thoughts, and that we're not in the thrall of these thoughts. We're not imprisoned by these thoughts. And... So it's very the Buddha is giving like a very logical answer to this kind of question being posed by the replica Buddha, but it's also very just something very profound and wise to it as well, and it's also very practical because if you follow the advice, it's useful everywhere in every situation, that we need to be careful of our own thoughts. That we put them on a pedestal, and we demolish the thoughts of others, and we fail to acknowledge that at least we fail to even understand why they might be holding or entertaining this view. So it's really interesting how we have this mechanism in our mind, as the replica Buddha puts it, that they say that their teaching is complete. They say the others' is teaching is inferior. Having quarreled thus, they go on disputing as they each say their own opinion is true. It's really interesting how we congeal on this idea that my opinion must be true. Like that's a phenomena. It's kind of you can say it's kind of like natural. Like whatever I think, I believe it's true. But it's really interesting when we can open up in our mind and ask ourselves, I wonder if I'm wrong. I wonder if I'm not entirely true. I wonder if that other person has something useful to say. And this is beginning the opening up to learning and to having that learning mode and that learning where we listen very carefully to somebody else, we listen to their opinion, and we wonder if it's true. And if it's not true, we can just listen to it and put it aside. As I often say to Mahatero, you know, a lot of the news these days is kind of entertainment. So we need to not take it as true, But we can take it as a reflection, or we can take it. We have to learn how to process that kind of entertainment and just not entirely dismiss it, like but not take it entirely seriously either. It's a very interesting challenge, because a lot of this kind of entertainment can be very frothy, very interesting, and sparkling to the mind. And we need to just understand, oh, this is just sparkly. This is like very clever how this frothy idea is being presented. So learning to observe our own mind and having that as an insight into the minds of other people is very powerful. And learning to see that we all, as people, we all gravitate towards that our view must be true is very powerful. And the more and more clever we are, the more esteemed we are, the more this trap can really open up. Oh, I'm an expert and I really know, and you don't know anything about this. It's a very dangerous condition, and you can understand why the Buddha would be talking about this with devas, who are very bright, who are very capable, who are very talented. They're very privileged in many ways by the good merit of their past deeds. And here they are as devas, but they can have that superiority, that contempt, that lack of empathy, that lack of appreciation for the perspectives of that other people may have. Even if that other person is a very ignorant kind of person and not knowledgeable, they have their own perspective in the world. It's important that we have that empathy. Oh, just as I think, they think too. Just as I hold my own views as superior, they hold their own view as superior. And it can be very... we can all be bound together by suffering, nevertheless. Just because I'm not as clever or I'm not as situated as these devas, we are still connected by suffering. So I shouldn't look at a deva and say, oh, they have it easy and they don't know what suffering is. No, they have deva suffering. And so getting past this kind of narrowness that we get into around our own views, that we're in this little tribe, that this is my team and we are team behind this kind of a view and opinion, and those are the enemies, they don't agree with our view. And it becomes very, knowledge isn't siloed like that. Wisdom is not siloed. And there are these universal, you know, qualities like that we all suffer, and that we're all deluded, and that wisdom is a very difficult thing to cultivate and develop. So these kind of questions that the Buddha is setting up are very, very useful to think about. Maybe we can hear from others.
No much special comments. And the same thing we are learning, that gods are becoming, appeared like a born lucky people. Very difficult to understand because they are closed. But the Sutta, the commentator says it is for devas. That's their commentary. But there's no such a direct relationship that Buddha is talking in terms of to the interest of God. There's no such a claim. And likewise, this is misled in that sense. But anyone who feel I am superior, I am happy, I am born lucky, they are closed. And very nice. If possible, I will ask to bring it. One professor presented one big globe and cut into two pieces. Upper part, you can see your privileges. And the lower part, your mishaps, your bad things. He gave some exemplified traits. Ask, please recognize yourself, one of the good things you have, one of the bad things. And he asked the opinion poll. And the ultimate, she mentioned, the lower part which has no privileges, I feel it's a failure, it's a disappointment, it's more earth-loving, more environmental-loving. Those who are prestigious, they gain, always they are talking against the earth. They are talking against the environment.
So all the achievement we have is environmental enemy, contradictory. All what we fail, we come down back to the earth. So it was a great thing. She gave a song also to us to get up and sing together. And just to have the earth. That means whenever you get failed, you are down to earth. Whenever you are achieving something, you are superior. That is what happened to the God. I feel dogs and the gods. The same three, same three terms. Always people kick them. Dogs and the gods. And the starting point of the... I'm talking too much on the conference. They told, we are not talking about the heavenly thing. We are talking something about the tension. We are talking something about the earth. Mindfulness for earth. We are the authority. There is no superpower. There is no white supremacy. We are asking everyone to come. And people came, are fairly human. Fairly, at least in the middle, or not the best, but much lower or much higher. So this sutta is for the already achieved people. I feel very sorry. They are excommunicated. They are de-casted. They are making their own the mind bubble. But we monks, I told the monks, life is the best the Buddha gave. You can disclaim everything. You can dissolve everything and be like human. So only that's all I have to tell about.
Thank you, Bhante and Swaminatha. I wanted to just, this brought up for me a memory first of there's a teacher who, her name's Byron Katie, and her process of kind of breaking through our mental affliction or problems is whenever you have a view, to question it. So like, I may have a view, I don't like that person. And you know, if I stick to that view, then it becomes very narrow. But if she would say, I don't like, you would turn that around and say, I don't like myself. That person doesn't like me, you know, or that person likes me, you know, or just, you know, just starting to question our views in that way. So I do that sometimes when I notice my view becomes narrow, is to just start tossing around, you know, opening it up, asking different questions to try to break that, because we get stuck to a trend and we stick with it naturally, and it's best to break through that somehow. And then also I thought of the Buddhist story of the woman that came with her dead baby, and she wanted the Buddha to help her bring it back to life, and he just suggested go around to every household in the village and ask anybody if they hadn't had a loved one die, or if, you know, if basically, I'm not sure the exact details of the story, but basically to ask people, you know, to break through her sense of, you know, that this is so personal to her. But then every place she went, everybody said, oh yes, you know, my aunt died, or my child died, or something. So everywhere she went, she found that people had experienced the loss of death through a loved one. And so it seemed like a good way for her to break her view that she must have her child, and that, you know, that arguing with reality, and rather connect with other people and try to find that connectivity, like Bhante was saying, was that, you know, that connectivity of views being narrowing rather than connective, and that our views cause us to be narrow. And the connectivity is that we're all suffering. So that's one of the connectivities, maybe the basic one for Buddhism and or for all humanity. The other thing I wanted to say is that's the in a monastic community or any sort of community that's mindful or especially meditation based, it seems is good because you're looking inward at yourself and you're trying to find out, you're trying to break the suffering. And when you're living in community, you have others continually giving you feedback. So in monastic community, we have forms for doing that, and it's encouraged, you know, to, you know, say, hey, you know, you're doing such and such, and did you know that you were doing that? And because it's very difficult for us to see ourselves, so we get this feedback constantly that is giving us ways to break through our very narrow way of seeing the world. By living in community, we get the feedback that helps us to check ourselves and say, you know, to suffer less, because we, so that's all I had. So.
Vasarai Bhante, and thank you, Mahasangha, for the comments. You know, one thing that is, you could say, really beautiful about the Buddha's teachings is that the Buddha acknowledges that suffering is a universal reality. And so you'll see in the world, a lot of people, they will believe that suffering is based on external things. You could say they think, well, because I don't have this or I don't have that, I cannot be happy. But then also they will, you know, judge others like, you don't have it as bad as me because, you know, you have either more things than me, or your skin color is different, or your religion is different than mine, so you have it better than me. And one of the beautiful things about the Buddha's teachings is that the Buddha acknowledges that suffering is a universal reality. So all beings suffer. It's not just a matter of, you know, a rich or a poor thing, you know, a human being thing or a deva thing. You know, it's all beings are suffering. It's not a thing of a black or a white thing. It's all beings are suffering. And so that's, I would say, one of the beautiful things about the Buddha's teachings. And I just wanted to share that comment.
Respect to Nayaka Hamdru and Mahasangha, I think the stanza was talking about supremacy. And there was a nice dialogue, if I remember right, about what is correct and what is wrong. In Chanki Sutta, where there is a dialogue between Buddha and another very young disciple of another belief, and where Buddha mentioned that you can have faith, or you can consider that what you believe and what you hear, what has come from your generations, is superior, but it will be just one fool following the others, and you will have to you will be just protecting it only. You will have to go beyond protection and see whether you can be really that truth that you are believing in. So therefore, the Buddha is not talking about claiming supremacy. Buddha is teaching gaining supremacy or being superior. And in that, as Bhante mentioned in earlier, you will have to have non-reaction, and you will have to learn the art of not doing things rather than doing things which will give the superpower.
Vasarai Mante and Mahasangha, I wanted to go on by saying, a lot of people, they will, as I was saying earlier, they will base suffering externally. And, I think a lot of times this will, when people get into arguments, or just in general, this may not be apparent to a lot of people, is that, again, all beings are suffering, and that suffering is a universal reality. So if you can understand that, if you can understand that suffering is a universal reality, as the Buddha taught, and not base suffering on external things like skin color or religion or number of material possessions, or, whether you're a human being or a deva, then you can empathize with other beings a lot more. Can perhaps avoid some of these conflicts with other beings. When you can start developing the empathy that this person is suffering just like me. And so, if we're in an argument, if two people are in an argument, clearly there's, suffering on both sides. Or if there's a conflict, there's suffering on both sides. So if one is able to empathize with other beings and understand that all beings in the world are suffering, regardless of their race, religion, socioeconomic background, anything, like that, human being or deva, then I would say it becomes a lot easier. It perhaps can become a lot easier to avoid some of these conflicts because you start developing this compassion for other beings rather than seeing them totally as different from you.
So as far as Chanki Sutta is quoted, there are 5 points. I think it is worth pertaining to this Mahavyuha Sutta. People can feel superior. Buddha says only 5 ways. Each one has to fall into either one or few of them. First one is Saddha, what you believe. So people, those who are Saddha, don't believe others. So therefore, they think others are inferior, I am superior, sectarianism. Second thing is ruchi. Ruchi means your desire. What do you like? Liking and disliking. So he do not like what I like, therefore he is inferior. I am the only person I know values. I am the person knows. So those who are happy with my happiness, good, my friends. Those who are not happy, I am not considering. Akara parivitakka, and the way I am thinking, my rational thinking, deductive thinking, my inferential thinking, it gave some kind of attraction. He also think in the same way, so whatever the thing, I can have a relationship with him. But if it is not with my way of deductive thinking, I have a kind of a repulsion. So he's inferior. Repulsion means inferior. So Buddha says the fourth one is anusava, what you have learned from your teacher. He put scripts into your mind. And those who are following and believing them become very disciplined and worth associating. But if they are not, says no. By expression or not, you keep them out. Keep them out means inferior. The last one is ditti nijjhana kanti. You have some views. Those who have the same kind of view naturally become family members. So that these 5, Saddha, Ruchi, Anusava, Akara Parivitakka, Ditti Nijjhanakkanti. The other part is 16 years old, the person with full knowledge of the Veda, a remarkable character. And he says, Bhante, are you? And Buddha says, each of them have 2 loopholes. The truth may not be within the what you believe. And truth may be living in, available in what you have rejected. Ruchi also the same. Whatever your likings, the truth may or may not be.
The outside it may be. And the anusava, your teacher says this is. And within that truth may or may not. But the rejected may. There may be. And akara parivitaka, your way of arguing, deductive thinking, may leading to the truth. Maybe other arguments are maybe leading to truth, even if you are skillful. The last one is ditti, that you, what you believe, what you view, may be completely wrong. Truth may not be within, outside. Then the other person, ask him, Bhante, if you are rejecting all five, what is the way out? There is a constructive question. The Buddha's way appears like a destructive. And he's asking the question. Then he says, Buddha, first start with saddha, and then go to the ruchi, and then go to the teaching of the book knowledge, and then the rational knowledge. Last one is view. See your view with saddha, and how they are camouflage each other, and happen it in a long formula. It's the best answer for the Mahavira Sutta. So as a layperson, we had a very long railway trip to Badulla, and my friend was happy, and he would have become a monk better than me. And he was teaching me the whole sutta by heart. So I came back and took the book and went to my working place. Evening I read it. It's a very good way for everyone, I mean teaching, learning, dialogue, everything, these 5 points. And these 5 points, I think, available in Anguttara Nikaya Panchaka Nipata also. And out of these five, again, Buddha making a formula, making a soup, making a cocktail, making a salad, all the wrong things, and roll out in such a way you can see your own mistakes. You have a dialogue within. And it must be given saddha jata upasankamati upasankamanto pairupasati venuma jnana ponika asko jnana rama quoted it, his book. It is not been translated. And how these 16 stages, anyone can understand what is my loophole, what is my mistake. So therefore, Chankhya Sutta, thank you for the reminding. And it is very philosophical, but very down to earth. This one, it says only for the lucky people. But the Chankhya Sutta is not. It's already lucky people are talking, that particular Kapitika and Buddha. But others can understand. So 5 minutes available.
I just want to conclude that part of this question and answer by saying that the Buddha concludes by saying, for a Brahman there is no being led by others, no selection among teaching and grasping tightly. Therefore he becomes overcome. He has overcome disputes since he does not regard another teaching as supreme. So again, this reminds me again of our interview this morning with this 15-year-old girl mentioning how though she was having this very strong experience in her meditation while sitting, in a way she could report to us and talk to her about it. So we can see here that we're not being selective amongst the teachings or amongst the thoughts. We're not grasping tightly to the teachings, to our own thoughts. Therefore, we can overcome disputation where I believe in my thoughts and I don't believe in the thoughts of somebody else. And since he does not regard another teacher, another teaching as supreme, he just sees thoughts as thoughts, and we can find the wisest path through these thicket of thoughts and thinking. And, you know, so it's very interesting here where in the end, the Brahman, in this case, Brahman here meaning an enlightened person, isn't led as such by others. He's led by his own thinking in a way, but he's not selective amongst those teachings and doesn't grasp tightly. Therefore, he overcomes disputation, and the worst disputes are the ones that go on in our own mind, since he does not regard another teaching as supreme. So it's very interesting. We always define Dhamma as things the way they really are. So it's not about looking for supreme or inferior. It's looking at the world as it really is. So that's the end of this little section, and we'll begin another section next week.
So that is right that
these kind of discussions and the conferences and others open the avenues for to see what is other people are thinking. But still we can have a dialogue. Maybe completely can have a agreement to the disagree. No harm. Earlier I had no that character. If I agree, that's it. If I disagree, no more discussion. Finished. I have to kill. I have to die myself. But later now, with so much of experience as a monk, as well as mindfulness with the children, I can listen now. Just listen what the others are telling. And there may be some pieces I can take, which was not in my periphery, in my this thing. So many were very happy and good that in Nisanwani we have always some foreign monks. And there was one guy, American guy, he was talking in Sinhala. Subha Udaya Sanakweva. Soon he came out and I told, what nonsense. No, I was learning in Peradeniya University and I am waiting to talk in Sinhala because I am forgetting terms. A very young guy. And we have 3 American crazy fellows in Sri Lanka also. I told some of them are here, so why don't you come? And he has been in my village, in Peradeniya University, talking in Sinhala. And no one looked down Sri Lanka. I thought that you would have get a lot of information. Even the desk, the inquiry desk, he told now there are a lot of news in Sri Lanka. Then most of them are wrong. Most of them are inferior, bad. But they say, no, now you are one of us. Come and entertain the hotel. And they are making the platform very, very open. So we must also in Nisanwane make everyone acceptable. Everyone is in the same level, whether monks or nuns or whatever may be. If someone feels wanted to have superiority, then I will break ribs. No, we have given enough. What else? We are sharing as much as possible. So make sure anyone coming must have the same membership. And no one is superior, but I am superior definitely, yes, because I am the competent authority. Not down to earth, definitely. But I simply ask, if anyone come, if something harassment happened from me, please take compensation, kiss him, hug him, and dance with him, and to give the chance. Okay, we are going to end because the time for rain, time for Pindapat. Thank you very much for the participation.